Welcome to Inova Radio, your place to gather insight and wisdom for creating healthy organizations. Discover how to uncover defects in your organization and find ways to be a powerful force of change for your organization. Here's your host, David Phillips.
Hey, how are you? I hope you've been well. I've been on a little bit of a vacation the last couple of weeks, probably 5 or 6 weeks, and am back ready to move forward in the podcast. I want to talk to you today a little bit about one of the reasons, actually, that I took a short break, and that's foster parenting and leadership. My wife and I are foster parents, and we have been foster parents, had our first kid in the house in April of 2015. So we've been foster parents just over a year. And in that time, we've had 9 kids come in our home. The first 8 were sibling pairs, and then we've had a precious, he's now 2.5-year-old boy in our home full-time since September 11th of this year. And we are actually in the process of adopting him as soon as the court terminates the rights of his. And so with that in mind, I wanted to take a few minutes and talk about what foster parenting has taught me about leadership. Fostering is not easy. Being a parent is not easy, but being a foster parent is not easy because you have these kids come in and out of your house. And it really just depends on the situation with the family. But they come in and out of your house. We've had kids as short as one night, and prior to having our little man since September 11th, the longest we'd had a child was 21 days. So we went from one night as the shortest amount of time we've had a foster child to 21 days, and so it's not easy. You get attached to these kids. You want the best for them as people, and particularly as foster parents, and yet it's a difficult thing to do because you just don't know what those kids bring with them, both literally and emotionally, and with baggage that they come with, whether it's sexual abuse or physical abuse or the drugs in the house or being yelled at, verbal abuse. You just don't know what those kids have brought in to your home. And we've had 3-year-old twins who knew the F word in context. And we've had kids who knew, who were so polite and so courteous at 5 and 7 years old that it would shock you that they were in foster care or that they were actually had been taught so well and were now in foster care. So it's a hard thing to do. And just like leadership is a hard thing to do. But I want to take a few minutes, like I said, and just share a few things, 8 or 9 things that I've learned about leadership from being a foster parent. Here's the first thing, and it's intuitive. We all know this, but everybody is different. To lead people requires that you get to know them and understand the arcs that their life has taken. When a new foster kid comes into your home, you need to learn about them. You need to listen to them and open up about yourself, but to listen to them and to listen for specific words and get to know their likes and dislikes. And you kind of have to do this quickly, or as quick as possible, because you just don't know how long they're going to be there, number one. And number two, you really want them to get to the point where they can trust you and feel comfortable in your presence. And so you have to get to know them. I know people in positions of leadership that say, well, I don't get to be friends with the people who I lead, or I don't get to be get to know what's going on in their lives or anything like that. And when I hear that, I'm thinking, what are you talking about? If you don't get to know the people that you lead, you're not going to understand how to best lead them. And that becomes a very selfish thing. I don't want to get close. I don't want to get to know them because I get emotionally attached, or I start to make decisions on relationships and things like that. Now, you've got to get to know people to know how to lead them, because everybody is different. Just like every foster child comes from a different situation, and there is no exact same situation. Period. There are always differences. There are always things that make every situation unique. And so you have to get to know them. You have to understand how to lead people the way they can be the best way, the way that they can be best led. And so to do that, you've got to build a relationship with them. You've got to get to know them, and you've got to figure out what makes them tick. And that should be intuitive for leaders, but unfortunately, I've seen too many situations where it really isn't. But that's the first thing. The second thing is, everyone is hiding something, and that will affect their productivity. That will affect how they work, and it will also affect how they're led. Our first set of kids, we were in. I was talking with one of them, and the other chimed in and said, "We're not. You know, mommy says not to talk about that." And we kind of had an inkling of some things, but we were trying to not trying. wasn't like we were trying to coerce details, but we were. We were just trying to listen and create environments where they can share if they were in danger or felt they had been in danger or abused or things like that. We weren't trying to coerce anything. But the older child said, "You know, mommy says we're not supposed to talk about those things." Everybody's hiding something. Me, you, your pastor, your priest, your rabbi, everybody's hiding something, and everybody's hurting, and that will affect how people do their job. It will affect how people will be led. It will affect how you lead them. And so we just have to recognize that. We have to come into a leadership position knowing that people have things that they just don't want to share, and they will struggle to share and be open about, and that impacts how you lead that person. The third thing, and we know this, I think, instinctively, but I just want to point out, trust takes time for many people. I've never had a child come into our home and just spill the beans about what their life was like. But over time, I've had them share some things, and you know, we've got a 2.5-year-old now, and he doesn't really have a memory of what his life was like. He's been in foster care since May of 2015, but we've had a couple of siblings, and over time, even though it was 9 days or 21 days, they learned to trust, just in small ways, and you have to take some of those wins you have to take those small things and make them wins for you to kind of keep moving. But trust takes time. And so as you lead people, as you need to, you need to understand that and be reminded of that, the different arcs in their life that their life has taken will impact how soon they trust you and how they trust you and the depth in which they will trust you. The fourth thing is that transitions can be emotionally overwhelming, so be considerate. The people that you lead are all going through difficult things. Whether they have shared that with you or not, they're going through divorce, they're going through struggles with their children, they're going through financial issues, they're going through stresses with maybe elderly parents. Everyone's and those are transition points. When you have a parent move from good health to bad health, that's a transition point for people. When you have a family member lose their job, maybe your spouse losing their job, that's a transition point, and that can be very overwhelming. When a kid is struggling, that parent is going to have a difficult time. So we have to be considerate, and a lot of this is wrapped up in emotional intelligence as applied to leadership. Resonant Leadership is the title of a book that I read a few years ago for my doctoral program, and I would recommend that to you. It was written by a couple of folks who helped Daniel Goleman put together emotional intelligence, and it's actually the emotional intelligence applied to leadership. And we need to be emotionally aware and emotionally have of a level of emotional maturity and emotional intelligence in our leadership to be able to spot the things that are going on emotionally within those that we lead. And that requires us to listen and be emotionally aware ourselves, and emotionally aware of what's going on, to be in relationship with them and to get to know them so that we can lead them the best way. The fifth thing, and this has come to be more about learned from the parents than the kids, is people are indeed selfish. It's rare to find those people who just want the best for the other. We are in the, as I said, we're in the process of, we're a foster to adopt family, looking at adopting this two and a half year old, just treasure of a kid. And, I've seen his biological mother, his biological grandmother, his biological uncle all make this about themselves, not what's best for the little man. I don't know what it's like to lose a child, and I can't fathom what they're going through emotionally on some level. But I do know if the little man was taken from me, it would be devastating. And this little guy has been in foster care almost as long as he was with his mom, so, and dad. They really haven't seen him very much. But they try to make it all about themselves. It really is rare to find those who really are more concerned about the other than they are themselves. We've kind of gone back and forth with the little man's biological mom, grandmother, and uncle in the last 6 or 8 weeks, and they've the mom signed over rights, then revoked that, and then so we're having to go through a termination hearing and things like that. And but when she was had mental clarity, she's a drug addict. When she had mental clarity, she said to me, "I want what's best for him, and I can't do that." And her mother, the grandmother in this scenario, at the last hearing, there was a termination hearing scheduled a couple weeks ago and had to get shifted, but she told my wife, "I can offer him love, but that's all I can offer him. He's in the best place he can be right now, and that's where we want him to stay." So they've kind of come to this resolution and understanding, and Dad has said that, the biological father said that since January, and or at least March, and so it took a long time for that to happen, but people are in it for themselves, and you have to recognize that as a leader, that and you have to build and foster an environment where you can make it more about the other, where you can make it about the organization, where you can make it about the company, where you can make it about your the other people in the organization, where you can make it about a vision and a passion. If you can do that, you can move people out of that selfishness into something that is greater than themselves. And you do that primarily through, and I mentioned this in a previous podcast, you do that through communication and credibility, through what you say and what you do. And something that I guess shocked me in this whole fostering process and working with courts and DFACs, and we've gone through a faith-based agency. And so some of the things that have shocked me in all of this is that the most vulnerable are often the least considered. That it really, when we have been to hearings, and I can think of one situation in particular, the mom got the benefit of the doubt when she probably should have been arrested. And the kids were sent back to the mom when she should have been arrested. And it just didn't make any sense to me. It didn't make sense to my wife either. And there doesn't seem to be a lot of... It's just accepted, almost, like this is the way it is. That the system is in such need, and there's such a DFACS workers are so overwhelmed that really oftentimes they're just trying to get the kids off their plate, and the workers become numb to really what's going on. But often the most vulnerable are the ones that are least considered in the decision-making process. And that's something that as leaders we need to be aware of. When you think about the most vulnerable in our communities, they are oftentimes the least considered. Whether it's do we put a park there, or do we build a building there, or do we fund this, or do we make an investment as a company in this location or in this organization? It really becomes it really has been brought to light more and more that the most vulnerable are the least considered, and that's something that business leaders, faith-based leaders, community leaders need to be ashamed of, or should be ashamed of, that the most vulnerable, whether it's the orphans, the widows, the poor, we need to be aware of what's going on in those communities, those kinds of communities, and we need to be making investments there. To not do that is a moral outrage. It really is a moral outrage in my mind. So be aware of the vulnerable in your community and the vulnerable stakeholders that you have an obligation to, and consider them. Consider the impact of your decisions on their lives and the impact of your acquisitions and the impact of your salary decisions and all of that. Consider the impact on the most vulnerable. Now, the next one, I'm a process and systems guy. I love processes and systems. I do well at uncovering broken processes and systems and coming up with ways to tweak it and fix it. But this is what I've learned, particularly from the courts in defects, about processes and systems and leadership. Unintended processes and unintended systems will lead to failure, bureaucracy, and inefficiency. If you don't care and pay attention to and keep watch over the systems and processes that have been put into place, then your organization's going to struggle because people move toward average. People don't move toward greatness. They move toward average. And average is the norm. So if you want to excel, if you want to lead and challenge people make sure that things are happening in a positive way within your organization, pay attention to the processes and systems that are in place. It is amazing to me. I was talking to an adoption lawyer 1st of July, and she had been a lawyer for defects at one point in her career. And I said to her, I'm a processes and systems guy. And she stopped me and she said, oh my God, you must hate this. And I said, yes, I do, because things just don't make sense. It becomes filled with bureaucracy. It becomes filled with nonsense. It becomes filled with, we just got to get through it. And nothing seems to make sense. That's kind of been our observation from the start, is that these systems and processes that are in place for fostering and for caring for some of the most vulnerable in our communities are really unattended to. And what has happened is that a set of bureaucracies, a set of rules and regulations and bureaucracy has been set up, and it's cover your rear end. It's that way in education. It's that way in a lot of government organizations. And so you need to pay attention to the systems and processes that have been put in place either by you or others, and attend to them so that they don't go they don't move the organization to normal, to average. They don't move people to average. And you have to communicate effectively within those systems and processes. Otherwise, people are going to, you're going to get paperworked to death. We want documentation of this, and we want documentation of that, because you have scope creep and you have all these other things that happen when the systems and processes aren't effective or out of whack or broken or have not been attended to in some time. I did some work for a car dealership a few years ago, and not as a salesman, but in operations. And I began to see how all of these leads, they had no clue. They had no sales process, in fact. And they had no clue where leads were going, if they'd been followed up to, if they'd been attended to. And so I spent about 2 weeks working. I walked in one morning with poster board and Sharpies and started drawing. And spent about 2 weeks on that and finally figured out where everything was coming from and how things were, data was flowing. And once we started putting processes and systems in place and responding appropriately and effectively and quickly, sales jumped. But nobody had attended to the process. Nobody had attended to leads, which is the lifeblood in sales. Nobody had done that. You need to make sure you attend to the processes and systems that are in place in your organization. The next one may seem unusual, but it is very true that bottom-up leadership is often required. You may know this better as squeaky wheel gets the grease. If you're not in a true place of leadership, you can still lead the organization even though you may have to do it from the bottom up. You may have to push, and you may have to pull and drag. You have to be careful how you do that, because people don't like change and people don't like transitions. But you may have to lead from the bottom up. Just from a fostering standpoint, there have been times when we've had to push the defects worker to do something and to get things done. I remember just filing the papers for termination. The judge had ordered them to be done by the end of the month, and the first day of the next month, they still weren't filed. And so I very coyly expressed my frustration with it. And it got done within an hour. Sometimes you have to push. Sometimes you have to challenge. And leadership from the bottom up has to happen. And so if you're not in a place where you feel like you're in a place of leadership, then lead from the bottom up. Make suggestions. Challenge the process. Challenge what's in place, but you have to do it nicely. You have to do it considerately. You have to do it with an understanding that you're taking a big risk, and it's okay to take that risk. Just be nice about it. I've pushed and challenged in ways that has gotten me in trouble, but now that I'm older, I do it differently. You can do those things, but bottom-up leadership sometimes has to happen. And finally, most of the time, people really do care. They're just overwhelmed. So as a leader, you have things that you're passionate about, and those are important to you. And if communicated properly and communicated effectively, other people can come to care about them as well. But just understand that a lot of times people are just overwhelmed. So you have to listen first and push gently. The defects workers that I've worked with, they care. They're just overwhelmed. It's a broken system. It needs changing. And not just in the state of Georgia, but in so many other states and even nationally. The system is broken, and they are overwhelmed. In the county next to the county we live in, there are 12 homes, 12 foster homes. And oftentimes, kids are taken to hotels and motels and a defects worker spends the night, there may be 20 kids in a hotel room, in a hotel in different rooms, and you have one defects worker that spends the night there. Kids are taken to hotels to sleep, and they're brought to the defects office for daycare, in essence, because they have no place to go. They don't have foster parents to take care of them. They are overwhelmed. And you've got people in your organization that way. They care. You've communicated and you've challenged them to care about the organization, about their community, about the things that you're passionate about and the places that you want to take them in a leadership standpoint. They're just overwhelmed. So you've got to listen. You can't push, and you can't yell, and you can't scream. You have to listen. And that's a maturity. That's getting to know the people that you're leading and the people that you're working with. But you just got to remember, people often are overwhelmed. So take that into consideration. Well, that's it for this podcast. Hope you're having a great summer, and look forward to being with you again in a couple of weeks. Take care.
Thanks for listening in today, and be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode of Powerful Insight. For more up-to-date information and tips to help you on your quest for change, head over to the website at www.wdavidphillips.com and sign up for our newsletter.